This is Paul Puckett. Welcome to Getting There. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about a wide variety of different things that all tie together into one or two issues that I'd like you to think about. Well, sometimes many different things combine, or when combined, help us learn things. And I want you to learn something from today's show. So I'm going to tie together a couple of different events, a couple of different thoughts, let you in on some different things. But I'd like to start with something I saw this morning that caught me by surprise. Speaking of things that are different, I walked into Starbucks. I know you're all shocked because you had no idea I like coffee, despite the B-Town commercial I regularly play, but Starbucks happens to be closer for my first cup of the day. And, of course, my friend that you may or may not know about, Harry, one of my close friends, Harry went along with me. Now, he has to stay in the car because there are those that do not understand the superiority of canines, also known as dogs, right, Harry? And so Harry sits in the car and he watches me very attentively to make sure that I'm coming back, probably, and hoping that I'll bring something to him. But that stopped a couple of years ago because gluten and I do not get along as a result of developing high blood sugar. Never did get diagnosed. That's a separate story, which maybe I'll cover at some point. At any rate, on Wednesdays, there's often a Bible study group at the big table inside of Starbucks, but the cars and trucks that normally would be out front for that, either they weren't here yet or they've shifted to another day or location. But there were two couples sitting at the table, one of whom, one of the ladies, was taking pictures of the other three. So, of course, I ordered my espresso. And I have very good ears. I don't eavesdrop on purpose. I really don't. It's just I hear very, very well. And I realized that the fella sitting at the end of the table had the other gentleman to his left and the lady he appeared to be with and was to his right. And he had a little piece of paper in front of him that he was reading from. So as I was waiting for my espresso a little closer to them, I overheard, "Do you take?" And I went, "They're getting married." Now, this isn't the official ceremony, although legally they are now married. They're having a big family wedding, but they met at Starbucks at that table, and they decided they wanted to get married there. Isn't that cool? Now, hey, yes. All right, he was wearing a nice, one of those little fashionable hats that my daughters would probably either love to see me wear or possibly hate to see me wear, I'll ask. It was shorts, t-shirt, and she was dressed casually. There were no attendants, you know. But what a cool thing to do. But it is a little different. A little different. So obviously they care about each other enough to tie the knot. And now they're heading to North Carolina to get married this weekend. I believe in Banner Elk, North Carolina. Don't see that very often, so I thought I would bring it up. Now, care. That's an interesting word. So I want to ask you a question, but I want you to know there's a reason I'm asking it. Do you care? Do you? Do you care about me? So, okay, whatever your answer is. Does it matter whether I care about you? And does it matter to me whether you care about me? Well, as human beings, we have the capacity for a great deal of caring. We also have the capacity not to care. We have things we care about. We have people we care about. And we have things that we really just don't care. It's not that we're against something. We just don't care. Do your thing, I'll do mine, whatever. There's a reason I'm asking that question I'd like to explain to you, but I want you to give some thought to the people that help you, the people that help you. I'll give you some examples. Everybody from the person who swings by weekly to pick up the garbage if you have someone who cleans your home, if you have someone who does your yard, you don't necessarily want somebody to do your plumbing or electrical, but occasionally you need somebody to, does it matter whether they care about you? You're going to have surgery. You're going to have surgery. Do you want the doctor to care about you? You're going to have an attorney maybe handle some work for you, maybe a real estate closing. Do you want that person to care about you? Does it matter to you? Do you care about them? No, my purpose here is not to convince you that you either should or shouldn't care about people. That is entirely up to you. I suspect all of us have a certain level. Some of us may be too much. I know somebody who just went through is going through a personal crisis because he got so caught up in an event that was, I don't know, 500-600 miles away from where he was, but it really traumatized him. And it's legitimate. It is. Because he felt like, and that's the important word there, he felt like he was there. And my heart goes out to the guy because he's a great guy. He just got caught up in something that was big and that really affected him. So you can care too much, and you can also care too little. Do you care if the person, or do you care if it is a person that manages your money, cares about you? Okay, that question was a little fragmented. Let's fix that. When you select a method of money management and delegate somebody to handle it, does it matter to you? Do you care if they care? If not, why not? And if so, why? Rhetorical questions. Now, to give you a hint of where I'm going, we return to one of my favorite bands, which seems very appropriate. Enjoy. Thank you. From the Alan Parsons Project, iRobot album, I Wouldn't Want to Be Like You. Now, that was not a message to you guys, okay? Your host is not saying he would not like to be like you. Neither is Harry. Speaking of Harry, Harry sits up every time I play a song out of curiosity, but because he likes it or because he was trying to take a nap and can't. I'm not really sure, but he looks very attentive when I play music, whether it's the show or not. Now, today's show, like some other shows that I may have forgotten to tell you, are pre-recorded because I have a business luncheon today that will run into the time that I would normally be doing the broadcast. So before we get to the main point of the show, since I do like to just bring up whatever points pop into my head, I'm sitting in Tom Bennett Park, not far from Starbucks. And I came here, of course, because I wanted some peace and quiet to record the show in, lest I wake up the entire building that I live in. And I'm looking at I-75 and the commuting traffic. And if you're heading on I-75 south, or if you did this morning, it's about 7:50 a.m. at the moment, Eastern. I don't know what's going on over there, but there's a traffic jam. Now, when I have done pre-recording of this show, one of the things that it makes you notice, because there's meters on my handy-dandy Zoom HN1 stereo recorder, obviously I'm not carrying the studio in the mobile man cave, which I refer to my Nissan Armada as, it picks up everything. So in the peace and quiet that I was looking forward to recording in this morning, first of all, they're mowing. Fortunately, I think you have avoided hearing that so far. And as I pulled into the peaceful, quiet park to do the recording, an ambulance and a fire truck pulled out with their sirens going. Finding quiet, maybe I'll do a show on finding peace and quiet, is harder and harder and harder to do unless you live in the country. If you live in Manhattan, it's a bear. I don't think it may not be possible. If you live in Manhattan and there are quiet places to go, there's a beautiful place actually towards the north end above the GW, the Cloisters. Highly recommend it, but you can still hear some stuff. So, I Wouldn't Want to Be Like You. Alan Parsons. The album is iRobot, and that's why I chose it. Not because I don't want to be like you, but I am curious. If you knew that professionals who worked for you didn't want to be like you, would you still work with them? What if they just didn't care at all? What if they were robots? I'm not kidding. There's a new trend in my industry. That's the investment advisory side. And there are several firms, and they're growing so rapidly it would blow your mind. I'm being totally serious. In the industry, we refer to them as robo-advisors, okay? So what do you get when you hire a robo-advisor? Well, for one thing, you don't get any local service. You don't get anybody to sit across from over espresso and discuss your needs, wants, get advice, assistance with investment selections, insurance products, whatever. What you get is an 800 number to a firm where you ultimately will talk to a human, but your money is being managed by a computer, a robot. Now, I don't have a problem with this necessarily. I really don't. I do find it ironic that the fees for this service, although much lower than the industry on average, are often higher than what I charge. This is not a commercial. This is not a commercial. But they are. So to me, they're even at less than 1%, at 89 basis points for one of them, for instance. That's still, given you're never going to see anybody there, seems a little high to me. Now, that particular one, that's all-inclusive. You pay no additional fees for the ETFs, exchange-traded funds, or mutual funds. There are others that charge a little less than that, but you're still, like when you hire me, you're somebody like me, you're still paying the underlying expenses of each fund on top of your fee. That's one of the reasons I keep my fees low. And just to address that, hey, Paul, why would you charge less than a 1-800 number robo-advisor? Well, first of all, I think it's a fair fee. I think it's a fair fee. And I think fees should be fair. When I say fair, they're fair to me, too. They're fair to me, too. I'm neither over or undercompensated. It's also longevity. I would love to see the facial expression of brokers and other advisors who bump into one of my clients and say, I can do it cheaper while I'm currently paying. And then they probably have a facial expression like, really? Are you sure? It's not that cheap. 0.75%, generally speaking. We can charge up to 1%, but usually we're 0.5%, 0.75%. Depends on what we're doing and for whom and for how much. Robo-advisors are this new trend where, obviously, the robo-advisor doesn't care about you because it can't. It can't. Or I'm going to let you know a little secret just for fun. I have friends who learn, they're smarter than I am, and they learn a great deal because they read a boatload of nonfiction, whether it's history, the sciences, it boggles my mind. Now, these are not people in school, okay? These are people who enjoy reading nonfiction. You may be one of them. Good for you. I tend to learn from fiction, science fiction a lot, fantasy, even some TV shows. I love to cook. Niles and Frasier are out to dinner arguing about how what the perfect meal is. And to them, the perfect meal has one flaw. Just one. So they can really enjoy the meal, but they can also enjoy a lengthy discussion of the one flaw. Well, I learned a word from that show, and I'm going to be confident and not look it up. I believe it's a French word. Niles looks at Frasier and says, I believe there's a soupçon of asparagus. A soupçon. Makes you sound pretty smart, doesn't it? Unless you're in France, in which case that would be, you know, just a normal everyday word to describe something. At any rate, I learned from fiction. I learned a lot from the Alan Parsons Project growing up. One of these days, if I have any sense, there'll be a book, Everything You Need to Know About Investing. I learned from Alan Parsons. I could do the same thing with Zach Brown and lots of other artists. The Something's Got to Give album with Zach Brown, you change a few words, and it's all about how to manage money. But that's for another day. Let's get back on track here. So I asked, do you care about the people you work with, and do you care if they care? Because I just want you to think about the direction a lot of this stuff is going. Now, one of the shows I learned a lot from was Star Trek. Now, in the original Star Trek, of course, you had Captain James T. Kirk, played by William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy as Spock. Yes, I know there are other characters. George Takei, Sulu, etc. But let's talk about Spock for a minute. Now, Spock was half human, half Vulcan. And Vulcans are purely logical. That was a great show. But ultimately, after several different iterations of Star Trek, The Next Generation came on. And that show, I really had difficulty figuring out who my favorite character was. I really did. Patrick Stewart, Captain Jean-Luc Picard, really, to me, embodies the perfect commander, the perfect captain. He makes his decisions sometimes on logic. He always gets feedback from the crew. But ultimately, he's the captain. He makes the decision. They respect him. They execute the decision. He's a fascinating character on the show. And then I have to tell you, Worf, the Klingon member of the crew, I can identify a lot with Worf. Worf appears to not be as deep as he is, and as the show develops, he develops. But the character I want to focus on, originally not one of my favorite characters, and he was never my favorite character, but I do have to tell you, he adds a lot to the show. Lieutenant Commander Data, Star Trek's only, the Federation's only fully functioning android crew member. Data wrestles with the fact that he doesn't have the ability to care. So my question for you to ponder as you look at the professionals you work with and how you do what you do is, do you care if they care? Do you care if the surgeon operating on you cares about you and your life? Or are you more interested in how well he's planning on doing the surgery, or she? I was brought into the world by a female doctor, so if I ever say he, it's actually probably the opposite of what I'm thinking. I always picture Dr. Janet Sutton, who brought me into the world. But do you care? I mean, they're going to operate on you, for heaven's sakes. Shouldn't they care about you, or does it matter? It's worth thinking about, because we go down these very interesting roads in life, and I think we get caught up either too much or not enough in how we feel about the people we work with and what they do for us. And it can create a disconnect. Anything goes wrong, it can aggravate a problem. Anything goes wrong with the robo-advisor, good luck calling them during Brexit, a new term I recently learned, as did all of you, describing Britain's exit from the European Union. Speaking of robo, so you have all these countries that form the European Union, right? This is not political, it just sounds it. You have all these countries that form the European Union. And ostensibly, it was done for very good reasons. It really was. From a border standpoint, I mean, Europe, the countries are not the size of the United States geographically. You can drive across Europe. But you have these things called border crossings. Well, one of the purposes of the European Union was, in addition to border crossings, you also have different types of currency for every country you go through. And so, you know, when you're in Italy, you had the lira. In Germany, you had the Deutschmark. You know, it's a pain. So they wanted to make it easier for the citizenry to travel in between countries, to have a unified country. Unified union of countries. And they wanted to have easier commerce between countries. And it all sounds good. So what happened? Why did Britain want to leave? Looking at it now, I'm wondering why they wanted to join. But why did they want to leave this beautiful, perfect union? Well, because it wasn't perfect. Because taking leaders and putting them in Brussels and not having your citizenry elect those people lets them do whatever they want without any say by the citizens of each country. Some of this, maybe the majority, was due to the refugees immigrating to each country, because the European Union said if you're a member country, you will accept refugees. That's what's getting all the press. But I did a little extra research. I went to the European Union's website, and I pulled up directives. Don't you just love that word, directive? To see, well, what do they direct their member countries to do? How about this one? Picture being a long-term, older citizen of Britain. Or Ireland or Scotland, doesn't matter. The United Kingdom. And you decide you're going to clean your house and then you're going to have tea and crumpets. The EU mandated, not too long ago, a maximum power level, a maximum wattage for vacuum cleaners, toasters, and teapots. Ostensibly for global warming, to prevent it. So it takes you longer to vacuum, assuming it will pick up everything. It takes you very much longer to toast your bread. And you wait much longer for your tea. Should people in Brussels be telling people in Britain maximum wattages for appliances? Might that be an indication of power run amok. Now, the people in Brussels are, in fact, people. They're not robots. But do they actually care? Or is their power too great and too removed? And that's my concern with robo-advisors and the concept of robots. Now, I was brought up in the industry believing that caring and contact were what people look for. But a lot of new research says, hey, if I can do this online, why wouldn't I? And why wouldn't you? I don't disagree necessarily, as long as you're comfortable with what's happening, because you're just a number. You're just a number. Sometimes you may feel like you're in some other place or some other time. And that was Some Other Time, Alan Parsons Project, iRobot, theme today. Do you care, and does it matter if the people you work with care? Does it matter if the people you work with care? Do they have to be people? Going back to Lieutenant Commander Data, eminently logical, his neuronic net, or whatever they called it, I can't remember at the moment, but his method of processing information, far superior to a human's. But what was he fascinated with? He wanted to have feelings. He wanted to have feelings. They're what makes us who we are. Contrast that with Captain Kirk from the earlier Star Trek. Now, there's a guy that operated a lot on feelings. Yes, I'm not just referring to... I mean, no, I'm not just referring to the ladies in Captain Kirk's... and the alien females in Captain Kirk's life. But, you know, the whole show was based on Westerns. One of the reasons I learned so much from fiction is the authors have the ability, the writers have the ability to control a setting and make it different enough from our reality that we can see things on those shows and learn from them. And learn from them. So, for instance, the very first kiss interracial on TV was what show? Star Trek. Star Trek. Not a coincidence. It's another universe. You can only get so offended. I don't know why anybody got offended by that. Hopefully, we have moved fully beyond that. But at the time, in the 60s, hey, that was a very big deal. That was a very, very big deal. You know, we haven't heard my favorite commercial. And since I'd like to have a sip of my espresso now, I think we will. Hi, this is Paul Puckett. As you may know, I love coffee. My friends would tell you I don't love coffee. It's an obsession, and not just any coffee. Espresso. If you're in the Bradenton area, one of the jewels of Bradenton is Old Main Street, and you'll find a coffee shop, B-Town Coffee, with a great alley and awnings and fans to keep you cool in the summer and in the shade, free Wi-Fi, and quite frankly, the best hot dog in town. Stop by. You'll enjoy B-Town Coffee. I gotta tell you, espresso for me is good all day long, but it sure is nice first thing in the morning. One day, if you're in the area, you do need to go to B-Town Coffee, and I'm not lying about the hot dog. And I really shouldn't be having hot dogs, particularly the bread that goes around. Well, really, I shouldn't be having the whole thing. The only thing good on a hot dog for me is the mustard. Law of unintended consequences. The law of unintended consequences. You know, even when people care, they may do something that has an unintended consequence. All right? Now, this is going to get specific into some things happening in my industry beyond robo-advisors. Okay? And I urge you, even if you're probably not in my field, but Google robo-advisor. Look at some of the industry publications like Investment News, Financial Advisor Magazine, Investment Advisor Magazine, and see what these robo-advisors are and how they do what they do. And think about, is an 800 number to an unknown person where I'm just a number a good way to manage money? It might very well be. It might very well be. And then look closely at what you're paying for that, even though it is cheaper than probably 80% of investment advisors. But the law of unintended consequences. Now, it's been my observation, correct or incorrect, that this law tends to be most implemented, triggered, whatever, by political bodies. They pass legislation or issue regulations intending one thing, and maybe that happens sometimes, but often that's not what happens. What happens is not quite what was intended, or sometimes much further from what was intended. What am I talking about specifically? Well, we've talked at length about the difference between a fiduciary who's legally obligated and ethically obligated to act in their client's best interest. And a financial advisor, also known as a registered representative, who is legally required to do what is suitable for you, whether it's in your best interest or not. Now, my position is both are valid, depending on what you're trying to do. And I've given you examples. Remember the 27-year-old who inherited money, and his investment objective, stated investment objective, was no risk. Let's put it in the bank and maybe in some treasury bonds, not bond funds. And I'll hold those till maturity. I'll keep the money in the bank. I'll never lose a dime. Well, technically, a fiduciary can't do that. Why? It's not in his best interest. He's 67. His money didn't keep up with inflation. He better have inherited a lot. And guess what? A good attorney could sue his fiduciary, his investment advisor, and say, why did you allow him to do what he wanted with his money? Well, see, brokers can let you do what you want with your money. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It may not be ideal, but it is, after all, at the end of the day, whose money? Yours. Whether it's a robot running it, a registered representative, financial advisor, investment advisor. It's your money. So the Department of Labor, as I mentioned, in concern for the amount of money you're spending on fees in your retirement accounts, decided to direct the Department of Labor to issue new rules regarding what the industry can and can't do with your money in a retirement plan. Now, because the Department of Labor, even though I believe it's an overreach, to me this falls under the SEC, but at any rate, they did it. But their authority only relates to retirement accounts, so this changes nothing on a regular account. Their stated intention, two really, reduce the amount you pay for investment advice and management, and to require even registered representatives, financial advisors, that is, to act in your best interest. Now, not mentioned often in this discussion are insurance agents that are neither brokers nor advisors. And insurance agents have products, some of which are sold for the wrong reason. I use, as we've discussed, one of those products for retired clients or people planning for retirement. They use it as a securities replacement, which is completely inappropriate. Well, that's not true. They use it as a stock replacement, which is completely inappropriate. It's a great bond replacement. As a matter of fact, it's a perfect bond replacement in my professional and personal opinion. So this rule is supposed to make it cheaper for you, and it's supposed to make sure your professionals act in your best interest. Well, we already know the investment advisory side of the table has always been fiduciaries. Now, I'm not saying to you that all investment advisors do a better job than registered representatives at all. At all. What I'm saying is, from a legal standpoint, they've always been required to act in your best interest. Here's what's interesting. Insurance agents and the firms they work through recognize that this rule may change their ability to offer certain products that are sold a great deal of the time into retirement accounts like IRAs. The rule as promulgated by the DOL, you would think, well, if we're going to need securities, we better get a registered investment advisory firm set up so we can continue to offer these products. But no, that is not what's happening. They're setting up broker-dealers. You see what I'm saying? They're setting up broker-dealers. Why? Because the intended consequence, or not consequence, the intended result is going to fail on both levels. The industry is not going to be directed, and these products don't sell themselves It's not investment management, an insurance agent's offering. It's a product. So they went to a product distribution channel known as a broker-dealer. Now, here's the second irony. Many of those who campaigned in favor of this rule with the Department of Labor have fee schedules like the one I mentioned last week that are higher than you would pay commission. So the result of the Department of Labor's fiduciary rule, intended to reduce your cost for financial services in retirement and to make sure the person you work with cares and acts in your best interest, will result in higher prices for you through delivery channels that on everything except retirement accounts will not require them to act in your best interest. Now, Britain already did this. It's one of the reasons I brought up leaving the EU. Britain already, and Australia both, passed very restrictive regulations on the investment industry. As a result, a significant portion of their population can no longer afford professional guidance. And those that are on the bandwagon of robo-advisors in the United States and around the world are recognizing that for them to offer services profitably, they are best served by doing it online, by reducing the cost of delivering products and services to something that can be done online. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But getting back to my original question and why I asked it, do you care? Do you care whether you're working with somebody who cares? Does it matter? Does it matter? A lot of polls out there over the past few years have indicated that the old training I got at Mass Mutual and Sovereign Bank, predecessor of Bank America, on high touch with clients is a generational thing. And that now as I'm, I guess, technically middle-aged, I look around at my friends and I look at my own preferences. I'm not sure high touch is what people are looking for, at least when it comes to their money. Solid advice, yes. Solid products and product selection, yes. Want to know somebody well enough to know that's what they're doing? Sure. But does it matter if you see them? Does it matter if you can call them and have them show up to help you with something? I don't know. I'm thinking that's changing. I think we're moving into a hopefully not one size fits all approach, but I think we're moving into a realm we need to be careful before we give up something and drive some firms out of business because they simply can't charge enough to cover what's needed. I think we need to look closely and say, well, what is it I want? And it's okay, whatever that is. My point is not you should have one or the other. My point is you should have something. You should have something that you believe in that will work at an affordable price based on whose criteria? Yours. It's your money. On the other hand, if you have no clue how to handle that money, you probably need to know those things before you run off and set up your accounts with people that don't care or robots that don't care. Okay. Hey, hope you enjoyed the philosophical waxing about robo-advisors, robots, and a little bit on the European Union. Now, you know, one of the things that happens when societies get controlled from leaders who are farther and farther away is it becomes sort of a world ruled by robots. It does. It does. And, you know, if you happen to live in that kind of world, remember, don't let it show.
If it's It's getting harder to face every day. Don't let it show. Don't let it show. Though it's getting harder to take what they say, just let it go. Just let it go. And if it hurts when they mention my name, say you don't know me. And if it helps when they say I'm to blame, say you don't know me. It's taking the easy way out. Keep it inside of you. Don't give in. Don't tell them anything. Don't let it. To believe there's a way, I won't be there. I won't be there. But if you smile when they mention my name, they'll never know you. And if you laugh when they say I'm to blame, they'll never own you. You've got nothing to hide. Keep it inside of you. Don't give in. Don't tell them anything. Don't let it. Don't let it
And that was from Alan Parsons' project, iRobot, Don't Let It Show. Now, if I sound a little different, we're back on a studio microphone to close out the show. You didn't think I'd record the entire thing at Tom Bennett Park, did you? Now, what inspired this show about whether people care or not, robo-advisors, everything being done at a distance where we just don't seem to be connected anymore? All right, I'll take a position. I think you should care. I really do. There are exceptions to that. Given the choice of somebody who cares a great deal and has no background or training in brain surgery, I'll take the brain surgeon who doesn't care. But if it's a choice between two brain surgeons, one cares, one doesn't, I'll take the one that cares. So what inspired the show? Well, the panic over Brexit, which, quite frankly, we won't even remember it in a decade, I don't think, unless all that stuff is still going on. The market took a tumble, which it does periodically, and it's absolutely nothing for you to be concerned about, because the money you have in the market should be at least a decade away from being drawn on, except for the dividends. Just a reminder, the stock market is not a place to put short-term funds. It's a long-term investment. So what inspired the show also was on LinkedIn, somebody put a video of Mercedes' new self-driving prototype vehicle. And it's luxurious as can be. It's a four-seater, and you sit facing each other. And there's plenty of room inside, more room than you would anticipate. Both leg room and a nice little table in between the two seats. Almost like a booth in a very, very fine restaurant. Leather, sound system, hookups for all your electronics, and the car itself is electronic. I wouldn't ride in that car for any price because I don't trust fully technology. Now, as an example, this show is currently being engineered on a MacBook Pro, which is one of my computers. Because the Mac occasionally doesn't cooperate with me on various tasks, I also have an Asus PC that's got a much bigger screen, and for whatever reason, the ports on the Asus tend to work more often. So, for instance, I transferred the recorded segments of this show from my Zoom HN1 stereo recorder, which I highly recommend if you're looking for a stereo recorder. They're not very expensive. They have better models, but this one does the job. I transferred that to my PC, my Asus. Put that on a USB drive and plugged it into my MacBook. Why? Because my MacBook, for whatever reason, does not like to read many SD cards. I could figure it out, but why bother? That's why I have two computers. I believe in double, triple, or quadruple redundancy. I'm not getting in a self-driving car because if it malfunctions, I have no ability to prevent what happens. Speaking of robo-advisors, one of them or more froze trading on Friday to make sure nobody made a mistake and sold Friday morning. Do you want your inability to trade frozen? Should that be the day you were planning on liquidating a parent's estate, for instance? Do you want to be frozen out because the computer thinks it's a bad day for you to trade? There are reasons to do that. I get that. If you're a professional listening, I'm not an idiot. I understand why sometimes that's necessary. But what I wanted to do today is just call attention beyond investing, but on investing as well, on how we're beginning to, and maybe have been for a long time, moving to a world where caring about anything, other people, events, and things of that nature, is either overdone in the wrong way or not done at all. It's almost like we shouldn't care. And I wanted to emphasize today, I really think you should care. I really do. And I think you should go to the Alan Parsons Project webpage, which I'm posting on the website, and take a listen to iRobot. There's some better songs on there. Okay, there's some equally good songs on there. Enjoy your week, and sometime between now and next show, find something you do care about, and maybe look into, do you care too much and it affects you more than it should, or do you not care at all and maybe, just maybe, you should return to the world of caring. Have a great week. I look forward to the conversation next week on Getting There.